Welcome to The Front Porch, where we talk about things that matter to folks in Appalachia from West Virginia Public Broadcasting. I'm Scott Finn, Executive Director here, along with our Bible, Greek mythology, and goat expert, Rick Wilson. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Scott.
And the most interesting tax lawyer in West Virginia, Lori Lynn. She's the columnist for the Charleston Daily Mail.
Hi, hey, Scott.
We've got a very special guest, Anna Sale, host and executive producer of the hit podcast Death, Sex, and Money from WNYC. Hey, Anna.
Hi, Scott.
In a nutshell, what's the mission of Death, Sex, and Money?
Death, Sex, and Money is an interview show where I talk to people about things we think about a lot and need to talk about more. So interviews that try to go a little deeper into the big questions and issues that we all grapple with but maybe don't talk about in polite conversation. So issues related to death, about purpose in life, about sex, relationships, and money and status. And I'd interview a mix of people who aren't famous and people who are famous. Some of the famous people have included Jane Fonda, actress Ellen Burstyn, West Virginia native Bill Withers, one of my favorite interviews. And I did a special one with the former U.S. Senator from Wyoming, Alan Simpson, who got involved in my love life.
Could you say that he even repaired your love life? Is that fair to say?
He and his wife played a pivotal role in getting my boyfriend and I back together, and we're now engaged to be married.
Congratulations.
So it was a big deal.
When are the nuptials?
August.
But Scott, I think we need to address the elephant in the room. I mean, Anna is probably really nervous today. This is probably her first run with the big dog. She might be a little nervous. And this could be a big break, so just relax today while we're here, okay?
Well, I am a big fan of The Front Porch. I really think it's cool what you're doing and having important conversations.
Well, and speaking of, you've talked about this idea of being a West Virginian, leaving, coming back, leaving again. Talk about, first of all, growing up here. What was it like to grow up in Charleston?
I had an incredible experience growing up here. I grew up in Charleston. I went to school at Holtz Elementary, John Adams Junior High, and George Washington High School. And I feel like my public education was excellent. I feel like running around the woods and exploring in creeks as a little girl was just like, you know, I can't imagine a better place to grow up. And I also, you know, working, you know, my first jobs in downtown Charleston and getting to know the community as a person who was growing up, not just as a kid of my parents, but as seeing how the community operated and getting friends on my own who were adults. Like, I really felt like I belonged somewhere growing up here. And it was a powerful feeling that when I left for the first time for college and went to California, I was stunned by how traumatic it was.
Traumatic how?
I missed it, you know, and I missed it. And I also felt, I can remember in college, I went to Stanford and I, you know, I had really brilliant students who I went to high school with. And as we sort of, it became clear that a lot of them weren't going to come back to West Virginia, I can remember being sort of fiercely like pissed off, angry that they were, that we had benefited so much from like our excellent public education. And here we were going out into the world to do interesting, exciting things, and none of us were going to come back. And that made me upset. And I think it was part of the reason why, after I graduated from college at Stanford, coming back felt like a real, like I was something I was really pulled to do.
You came back. You worked for the Sierra Club and then West Virginia Public Broadcasting. You know, we had Courtney Forbes on here last week talking about her experience of coming back. What was your experience socially coming back?
I mean, I can remember, like, because I started my journalism career here in West Virginia. And I can remember just, you know, in the weeks after my first story aired, somebody, like, it was the weirdest way people would compliment me. I remember people saying, like, that was a great story. Please don't leave. So I felt totally supported and like I was being cheered on, but also in this way of like, we think you're talented and it makes us nervous that you're going to abandon us. It was kind of interesting. That's more professionally. Socially, I felt like, you know, I lived on the East End of Charleston. I loved living in a place where you could run into, you know, you didn't have to plan to meet up with people. You would just run into people. I mean, I loved baseball games in Charleston where it was just a presumption that if you showed up, there would be this community of people to just hang out with and friends. And I think, you know, I benefited from being from here. So I think it might be different for another 22 or 23 year old who's not from Charleston, who doesn't immediately see familiar faces when they walk somewhere. But I just felt totally connected and like a real member of the community.
I find it interesting that the first reaction people have is, wow, you're really good, so you're going to go away. Because good things don't stay here. People with real talent leave. What do you think is going on there in people's minds? There's some truth to that, isn't there?
Especially in journalism.
Yeah. You know,
we have that at the paper, certainly, as well. Same thing.
It's not necessarily anything about West Virginia. It's you're moving on to larger audiences, a bigger impact. It just kind of makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because I've thought about that because it is like particularly in broadcast journalism and in newspapers, like you start at smaller outlets, you learn and you move up like Matt Lauer starting in Huntington. You know, now he's been the Today Show for a decade, you know, for a long time. But it seemed a little bit like it had more of an edge here. Like this, it's not a sense of like, yeah, we're really excited that we talented young people start their careers here and we like to watch where they end up. It's more a sense of, I think there is a pride, certainly, in cheering on West Virginians who are successful outside of West Virginia, but there also comes with it that sense of loss. And I think it is because there's a real, you know, it's difficult to be in a state that you love where you're watching the population age and the population decline and where you look back 50, 60, 70 years, and, you know, people talk about how many people used to be moving in when industries were booming, et cetera. You know, so there is a bit of, I get it, but it is a strange thing when you are an ambitious young person who's excited to explore the world to have people you love and the community you care about say, like, we hope you're successful, but maybe not so much that you leave.
Well, I was wanting to ask Anna how she feels to have sort of turned her back on her people and betrayed her heritage.
Oh, Rick. I don't think I have. I don't think I have. But I do. It is interesting. At this point in my life, I don't foresee a time when I'm going to live in West Virginia again. And that's a new feeling. That's just been in the last couple of years. And thinking about that and how I feel about that, it makes visits here different. Because I'm trying to like soak up all that I love about this place, but there is a little bit of the experience that's bittersweet because I know this isn't going to be where I live anytime soon.
Is there an analog to low-income families, let's say, whose kids in Hollers in Lincoln County are thinking of going off to college?
I think that's totally right about an analog between families in a rural place where you so want the best for your kid and want them to succeed, but the sadness that comes with the idea that if, you know, my kid goes off to school, does well, that maybe they're not going to be around for Sunday dinners, you know, that are part of our family, that they're somehow choosing worldly success over family relationships or family closeness. And yeah, and I've thought about that a lot.
You had a great time here. You made a lot of friends. You made a lot of impact in the community here at West Virginia Public Broadcasting. People still talking about it. And then you left. Talk about what was going on in your life, why you left.
I was in my, like, let's see, how old was I? I was 28 when I left Charleston. I was back here for 5 years after college. And during those 5 years, I was like very happy, felt very held in this community, felt like I was learning a lot in journalism and doing important work that mattered. But I also had that itch of like, am I really pushing myself? How do I compare to the others out there, you know? And that was like this sort of anxiety underneath, just like, you know, when am I going to explore this? If I don't ever leave West Virginia, am I going to regret it and wonder? But when I left, it was kind of interesting after sort of having these quiet worries. I just sort of, there came a time where it felt, nope, I'm ready. I'm ready to try something else. And I went to Connecticut to the public radio station there and lived in Hartford. And that was totally different and at totally different time. I mean, between the time I left West Virginia Public Broadcasting and started in Connecticut, the financial collapse happened. So America was changed and all the stories we were telling and reporting changed. But I think it was the right timing. I was ready to do it.
There's no way. I think it's safe to say there's no way you would be hosting a hit podcast right now if you'd stayed in West Virginia. So why would you feel guilty about leaving here if this is the thing that's allowed you to do this amazing podcast?
You just wounded Lori and I, Scott. Let me just say that.
I mean, I like, it's interesting because I don't think it's a definite truism that I would not be hosting a hit podcast if I stayed in West Virginia, but the road would have been very different. The real difference working at WNYC, which is the public radio station in New York City, is there's resources that have not been existed at public radio stations where I worked elsewhere, where there's the money to invest in things that you're just going to try. And why do I feel guilty? I don't know that I feel guilty. I feel like more I think that there's a sense when I come back that there's – do you feel guilty? You should probably feel a little guilty, you know. So
it's imposed on you.
Yeah. I mean, when I moved away in 2008, a good friend of mine saw me walking down Capitol Street and rolled down the window. And he was joking. He said it with a smile on his face, but he just goes, "Quitter." And I totally know what he meant, because it's just like you can build an incredible life here and really add important things to the community by being one person who's enterprising and get stuff done. And there are a lot of people who've done that in West Virginia. So when he was calling me a quitter, he was just saying, you're kind of taking the easy road by leaving for another place.
What has been your experience as a young professional in New York and in Connecticut versus here? That was one of the points that Courtney made in her column and when she spoke to us last week. Do you feel like you're treated differently there versus when you were here in Charleston?
You know, I think one of the things that Courtney talked about was a sense of – I think she was alluding to a bit of the sense of maybe there's just kind of like a closeness to outsiders. I was from here, so I didn't feel that. I felt – definitely cheered on and warmly embraced.
But she was from here as well.
Yeah. I don't know. I didn't feel that. I felt the idea of when you have a job in West Virginia with benefits and a good enough salary, what are you complaining about? So that was more what I can remember. And I think that's you know, to have a job when you're in your 20s with benefits and, you know, the opportunity for a pension in the early 2000s it's a great thing. But you know, that's not really what a 25, 26, 27-year-old wants to hear. You know, I wasn't thinking about my pension. I was thinking about, what am I going to do in the world? And are you going to help me do it?
I just have three random things. You know, one is, like, I'm here to do the obligatory biblical reference and an ancient Greek reference. Nostalgia is a word that comes from the Greek word for home and pain. So it literally is the pain of homesickness. And then, for all the West Virginians who moved away, the obligatory biblical reference of the week is Psalm 137. By the rivers of Babylon we sat and we wept as we remembered Zion. We hung our lyres upon the willows there, for our captors required of us songs. But how can we sing the Lord's song in a foreign land? That's just the first part. It gets nasty toward the end.
What's the last line you just said? How can we
sing the Lord's song in a foreign land?
So, what do you think that means?
Well, they were driven away into exile, and a lot of West Virginians are driven into economic exile. I mean, some, like my brother, had a path like yours. He was a journalist. He wound up at the New York Times, and, you know, he would come back occasionally. He was like, get me the hell out of this place, you know. But I think for a lot of people, it's more like economic exile, and you have to go. You can't stay. You'd like to. So it depends on probably your position, your career, a lot of different things like that.
How can you sing the Lord's song in a foreign land? That's interesting, because that's like the opposite of what you were talking about, nostalgia, which is, I hear that as sort of mourning the home, but also childhood. And, you know, how can you sing the Lord's song in a foreign land? It's like, how can you be doing what you're supposed to do if you're in a foreign land? That's kind of interesting.
I didn't make it up.
I know. I didn't make it up.
What is it like being a West Virginian in New York? What's people's reaction when they ask you where you're from and you say, I'm from Charleston, West Virginia?
What I often say is, I'm from West Virginia. Where are you from in West Virginia? I'm from Charleston. I'm from the city. So I actually had a pretty typical suburban American, you know, childhood.
They say
so,
Charleston. Oh, that's up in the Eastern Panhandle.
They
right?
sort of know. They kind of like, I think most
I've
people know the capitals of states. That might be the extent of their knowledge of West Virginia. But there's sort of a like, you know, oh, that's kind of exotic, you know. But not a lot of, when I was like younger and would go elsewhere and talk about West Virginia, there would be the jokes and the sort of like, you know, shoelessness and incest, et cetera. I don't really run into that much. It's sort of like, oh, that's interesting. You're from a place that means something. So, yeah, I like to talk about how I'm from West Virginia. And the cool thing is, in New York, when I run into a fellow West Virginian, the like thrill, like it's so, you know, when you social interactions in New York can be a little bit like measuring each other up, like, oh, is he trying to get something from me, or what is this transactional in some sort? And then somebody says, I'm from West Virginia, and it's just like, oh, let's embrace, you know, what county are you from, you know? And so I see a lot of West Virginians and try to, like, you know, when I hear of young people who've moved up to the city to, you know, try to follow this or that dream, I try to, you know, meet up with them and tell them the first, you know, 18 months are going to be terrible and then it will get better, and that sort of thing. It is really fun to see West Virginians in the city.
It's the neatest thing I've found driving in other places in the country with a West Virginia license plate. I mean, people have just come up to me and struck up conversations just based on my license plate, and they want to know all about me, uh-huh. You know, where am I from? And it's like a secret handshake almost.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. What I think about a lot, because I covered politics before I hosted Death, Sex, and Money, and I think a lot about the ways that New Yorkers understand what's happening in the rest of the country in the ways they completely do not. For example, in, you know, presidential elections, I felt in part like my job for our New York audience was to explain the sources of economic anxiety in places outside of New York. You know, to be, what does it mean to live in a part of the country that has experienced deindustrialization and the pathway to the middle class does not look like what it looked like 20 or 30 years ago. Certainly that doesn't mean everyone in New York City is rich. There's plenty of poor people who are struggling, but it looks different in the city. So I kind of feel like as part of my mission as a journalist is to kind of explain the rest of America to people who live in highly concentrated populations and urban centers.
What you experience about people's ideas about the rest of America, is it just ignorance? Is it lack of interest? Or is there sometimes derision toward these people that vote in ways that are so against their own self-interest, you know, that sort of idea?
Yeah, I mean, you definitely hear that, why are people voting against their own self-interest? And it's like, well, how do you know what their interest is? And yeah, I mean, when you live in a very blue part of the country, people do not understand places like West Virginia. And I think also, I've really loved living in places outside of West Virginia where the community around me looks more like the way America is changing demographically. I've learned a lot and grown a lot by being around places where, you know, New York City is like more than a third foreign born. So talking to your cab driver and, you know, and hearing about growing up in Ecuador, you know, all those sorts of things. So I think that there is fundamentally a disconnect in understanding people's experiences. And I think a lot of that is economic history, but also demographics.
So you're getting married. You talked about it.
I am getting married.
To a guy from Wyoming.
He's actually from South Carolina. He's an ecologist, and he's done a lot of field work in Wyoming. He's from the other Charleston.
Do you envision raising a family in New York City then?
God, Scott, you're asking the hard questions. that is really hard to know because it's hard when you're thinking about raising a family and thinking about how do I create stability. I think about what stability looked like in my growing up, and I cannot recreate that in New York City. I cannot recreate the experience I had as a child in New York City when I had a great childhood. So now we're in a phase of like, well, okay, if we're not going to live in places like where we grew up, like what does it look like? How do we create a family that has the best parts of how we grew up, but in a very different context?
What flipped in your head that made you decide that you're probably never going to come back here? What changed?
Well, it's sort of like, I was thinking about it, like it's sort of like thinking about one of your first loves. And when you think about that love, it's like, oh, I just want to hold that close. And of course, I would want that in my life again. And then you sort of hold it for a bit. And then you're like, but to make that love work, my life couldn't be what it is, you know? And so I think it was like, I feel so connected to West Virginia. I feel so proud of coming from West Virginia Public Broadcasting and what the work is that is here. And so there's something about like, if I feel that passionately and that, you know, warmly about something, how could I not be a part of it? Or how could that not be part of my life in a more daily way? But it's sort of like recognizing like, no, I love it. And I just am going to love it in a different context. I'm going to love that experience that was, and also just figure out new ways to feel connected or supporting, you know, what's happening here from afar.
What can the diaspora of West Virginians that are all over the country in places on New York, what can they be doing to help? Or is that a stupid question? Why should you have to do anything?
Yeah, Scott, what are you doing as an Iowan?
I'm doing nothing. Nothing at all. So, yeah, that's an interesting thing in itself. We have so many of these ideas of obligations for being from West Virginia. It's almost like it's another family.
Yeah.
It is. And like last week you said, you know, no one ever feels guilty about leaving Tampa. Do you remember that? I actually listen to what you say occasionally, Scott. But it's a different thing when you leave here.
When I go back to Tampa, I was there for 4 years. No one ever says, are you going to stay? They don't worry about that. Yeah. There's a ton of people from Ecuador coming in and take my place.
Yeah.
I was much less necessary there. But then again, there are a lot of benefits to living someplace else. It's harder to live here than other places. I do think so, especially if you don't have money. Yeah. Money will insulate you from a lot. But if you don't have that, this can be a hard place.
It is a hard place to live. And if you care about certain issues, it's like always being on and always having to watch and kind of always being on. And it's like being on sentry in some ways.
What's hard about it, though? I mean, when you say it's hard to live here, what makes it difficult?
I mean, it sounds silly, but what Rick said about measuring your life in disasters. So the other day, Randall McCoy's son wrote an essay that was in the newspaper. And Randall McCoy is the sole survivor of the Sago mine disaster. And I covered the Sago mine disaster for the Charleston Gazette. And it took a toll on the people that covered it. I mean, it sounds stupid to say that because, of course, how much worse for the families, for Randall and his family. And just, it was this rush of feelings to read this article from this child that would not have existed if Randall hadn't survived. It was, I felt that's not something you have to deal with in Tampa. You know, you don't have your water turned off for 2 weeks because of a coal chemical spill. I do think it can be harder to live here, even if you're middle class or upper middle class. But maybe, I don't know, maybe that's not right.
Well, I think that there's a lot of tragedy and loss in different ways in other parts of the country. You know, I was just reading this morning about a basketball player who was shot and killed in Paterson, New Jersey. But I think that what's hard about being in West Virginia, if you love this place and if you feel some sense of responsibility for it, you feel like part of the fate of this place is sitting on your shoulders. That's like being on guard all the time. Like, what is the future of West Virginia going to look like? Like, is it going to be this model? Is it going to be this model? And like, I've got to be in the middle of it because there aren't enough people fighting for this place. I also think it's very easy to be here, like driving around with my mom and like not having to worry about parking. And you go into a store and there's no line at the cash register and like everything is 10 minutes away. I mean, that's the benefit of living in a small city in West Virginia. It's different in more rural places. But I feel my body just like relax when I come to West Virginia from New York. Like, ugh. You asked about what people who have left here, what they can do if they don't have to do anything. But like, I get a lot of joy out of focusing my charitable giving in West Virginia from New York because the buying power is more, you know. I feel like a rich person when I'm, you know, can give money to organizations that really need it in West Virginia and New York. You know, there's plenty of people who can give some money to things. I also think it's awesome to recognize the powerful diaspora of Appalachian people and how we do look out for one another when we're living far away from Appalachia, and that like helping each other succeed in the wider world. It's like cool because it makes you feel connected to home even though neither of you are living there.
You interviewed Bill Withers for your show. And I remember you once saying something about how if you had a religion, it was the religion of Bill Withers.
Yeah.
Bill Witherism. He's an amazing guy.
What I say about Bill Withers is if Bill Withers was a preacher in a church, I would be in the front row, the front pew every Sunday, because the way he talks about life in this clear, kind of honest way is just – it's rare and it's special and it makes me feel enlivened. But he talks about West Virginia with a real like – with warmth and some nostalgia and like can talk really honestly about how it made him the man he was, which, you know, talks about growing up in Slab Fork, West Virginia. His parents split up when he was growing up, and I think his mom lived on the white side of town, his dad lived on the black side of town, and he was constantly moving, you know, across the tracks. And so he talked about in terms of musical influences, hearing country music, hearing R&B. But he also had a tough time. He was a little kid who was sort of lighter-skinned black kid. So he didn't feel fully embraced by the black community. And he also had a stutter, and he got made fun of. And so there's parts of growing up where he felt like he was ready to leave those people. So he has at once like written Lean on Me, which is about a community taking care of each other. He learned about growing up in a coal camp in southern West Virginia. But he's lived in L.A. for all of his adult life and feels quite satisfied with that. Doesn't feel the need to move back to Slab Fork. and I can remember the first time I interviewed him for West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I asked him about that. And he, you know, well, you ever feel like you need to? And he's like, no, West Virginia was important, but so were all these other places where I've lived. Mm. And that's okay. And that was like, oh, you don't have to have this existential conflict about being a West Virginian who's left. You can just say, I got a lot from that place, and I also got a lot from other places.
I guess some of us just have to carry the load, you know, that you left so callously.
I mean, that
don't
is
think
true.
Twice. It's all right.
It's true. I mean, there is a cost.
My wife, Wendy, she talks about growing up and having West Virginia studies in the 8th grade. Mm-hmm. And they talk about famous West Virginians. Like Soupy Sales, the comedian, uh-huh. is brought up, and Joyce DeWitt, who was in Three's Company.
I forgot about her. I got to start claiming her again.
I look forward to the day when Anna Sale is joining that group of people that we talk about. You know, I think you've figured out a way to be successful in the world and still be very much a West Virginian, too, and that's quite a feat.
Thanks, Scott.
We thought maybe here at the front porch we could give you guys some advice at Death, Sex, and Money about how to improve the show.
Please.
Okay. First of all, it's a name. Uh-huh. Right? Death, Sex, and Money, it might be great for a New York crowd. It's a little bit too in your face, I think, for people here in West Virginia.
I can see that.
Just think about it. We have a couple of suggestions. Actually, I thought since you are a radio professional, it'd be better if it happened in your voice. So try out these different these different permutations of Death, Sex, and Money.
Hi, I'm Anna Sale, and welcome to Life, Love, and Kittens.
See?
That would be a hit on the internet. Yeah,
that's what we're trying there. Yeah. All right, now here's a couple for different audiences here.
And now the show for evangelical Christians that ask the big questions often left out of polite Christian conversations, everlasting life, heterosexual marriage, and money. That's true.
You see, money still works.
Yeah, but I have thought about when you frame conversations around death, there is a bit of a presumption that you're not thinking about eternal life afterwards, you know, if you think that there's some ending at death. So I have thought about that.
All right, one last one.
Okay. This would not sell. Hi, I'm Anna Sale, and this is Death, Taxes, Abstinence, and Money. Who would want to listen to that?
All our conservative fans out there. So, and I think Rick had a couple of suggestions, too, about things that would add to your show.
Well, you know, one, you know, I'm just a Mud River guy, but like guns, trucks, and beer, because at least two of those have a lot to do with sex anyway, and one sort of ties in with death, you know.
I feel like guns, trucks, and beer, well, guns and trucks at least, I think, fit in with money because it's about like what you have, the status symbols you have to show off.
I was thinking trucks and sex kind of go together too.
That's true. What happens in Mud River?
I'm actually interested in what aspects of sex do we not talk about?
Well, I think we don't talk. There's a kind of graphic in your face sort of sexualized conversation that happens everywhere. But the real emotional side of sex, which is feelings of vulnerability, feelings of how, you know, how sex works in our relationships. And I sort of think of it larger. And I one of the things that I do on the show is often talk to couples about how their relationships work. Mm-hmm. So sort of see that as coming under the banner of sex, just how we relate to each other in our romantic relationships. But sex is everywhere, but also, you know, there's a lot that we don't engage with because it's scary.
Anna is going to be coming back on June 24th for Festival, and you're interviewing Dwight Gardner from the New York Times.
Yeah, Dwight Gardner is one of the book critics at the Times, and I've been an admirer of his because I just like his sensibilities that he brings to reviewing books. And then I found out that he lived for a time in Charleston. His family's from West Virginia. So we've organized West Virginia expat happy hours in New York City from time to time. So I asked him if he wanted to come down and talk at Festival, and he was immediately really enthusiastic, which was really cool. So I get to talk to him about his work and what he's excited by in the worlds of arts and letters, and also about our connections to this place.
So don't miss that if you're anywhere near Charleston, West Virginia at that time. Anna, is there anything else you wanted to say?
Well, I want to say West Virginia Public Broadcasting is an incredible place to learn journalism, and I feel really grateful for my time here, and I feel so thrilled that it's continuing to thrive. And my podcast, you can find it at deathsexmoney.org, and we put out new episodes about every other week.
Anna's mom, June, is really good at teaching people how to download podcasts if you don't know how.
Yes.
So look her up in the phone book, and she'll come by your house. Person by person. You've been listening to The Front Porch. I'm Scott Finn, Executive Director of West Virginia Public Broadcasting. We're joined by Anna Sale of Death, Sex, and Money, Lori Lynn of the Charleston Daily Mail, and Rick Wilson of the American Friends Service Committee. You can find us in the same places you find Death, Sex, and Money, Stitcher, and iTunes, and at wvpublic.org. Thanks for listening.